Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Wisconsin Badgers podcast, joining you in the midst, the ramp up to the NCAA Tournament 2019 edition. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Badgers podcast. We got a jam-packed episode for you today. We got to talk a lot about this Wisconsin Badgers team. Their first game comes Friday against Oregon. Yep, same Oregon team that they saw in 2014 and 2015. Well, not the same, very different teams, but same jersey colors anyway, in the NCAA tournament. So three matchups in 6 years, and it is going to be the Ducks from the Pac-12, the 12th seeded Ducks. They won the Pac-12 tournament facing Wisconsin in the first round. We're going to chat a lot about Wisconsin. I talked to Jay Kokorowski. He is with Badgers, or Bucky's fifth quarter, I should say, in Madison. He's a great guy to chat with. Jeff Patrick is unavailable this week, very busy covering the team, getting prepared to get out to San Jose. But Jake, great knowledge on the Badgers and talked a lot about the matchup, some of the observations he's made, looking ahead in the bracket a little bit. So there's lots of good stuff to touch on, talk about with this Wisconsin Badgers team. Then I'm taking a little bit of a risk and chatting with Ben Steele, a Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Marquette Golden Eagles. I know, you're Badgers fans. You don't want to hear about Marquette, possibly. Feel free to turn that part of the vid off. I don't mind. It'll come after Jake. It'll be the second part of the podcast. But, you know, maybe you're a basketball fan like myself and are interested in what's going on with the other Wisconsin teams in the tournament. Marquette making the trip after missing out last year. They've got one of the best players in the country in Marcus Howard. And they're going up against one of the other best players of the country in Ja Morant of Murray State. That guy's going to be a lottery pick, top three pick in the NBA draft next year. And this 5-12 matchup, definitely one to circle for a lot of prognosticators who see upset potential there, and also for people who just like great individual matchups. You got the two highest scoring guys in the whole tournament are going to be squaring off with each other. Marcus Howard is at 25 points a game, the number one scorer in this tournament, and Morant at 24.6, not far behind. So that game gets underway Thursday in Hartford, Connecticut. Ben Steele on his way out there as we recorded this. So he was actually in O'Hare Airport awaiting a plane to take him to Connecticut. I caught up with him and chatted a little bit about what he sees in this matchup and a little bit of Marquette's late season struggles here. 5 losses in 6 games to close down the year, which really took an opportunity to win the Big East. Certainly the regular season title, maybe even the tournament title, out from underneath them. So interesting to see if they can bounce back once the spotlights are on full blast. You should find this podcast at Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. That's the most popular place to get something like this. Rate us, review us, let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. We've got a Brewers podcast that's now coming at you every week. The Bucks podcast already comes to you every week. And the Packers podcast, granted that it will not feature me, but Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein constantly letting you know what's going on with the green and gold after their recent free agency frenzy there. The Packers are back in the news as well. It is a phenomenal time, this month in general, a phenomenal time to be a Wisconsin sports fan as we prepare for the baseball season. The Bucks are headed toward the playoffs in a big way, and now, of course, the NCAA tournament. Let's talk a little bit about the Wisconsin Badgers, the fifth-seeded Wisconsin Badgers, and their matchup with Oregon with Jake Kokorowski. Here he is. Here now is my special guest, Jake Kokorowski of Bucky's Fifth Quarter. He's deputy manager of Bucky's Fifth Quarter, also the podcast manager over there, and he's about as knowledgeable on the topic of Wisconsin Badgers basketball as anybody out there. Wanted to get his impressions of the forthcoming NCAA tournament. So Jake, right off the top, I'm just curious what you were thinking when you saw the bracket getting unveiled. I know for me, I was feeling like this is a pretty good matchup for Wisconsin, just because Oregon does not have a good record. They had to win their conference tournament to get this far. Their resume isn't that impressive on the surface. They do some things well, but I guess I thought this was about as good a matchup as you could hope for Wisconsin. What were your initial thoughts?
Yeah, really, I'm intrigued by the matchup. I think the entire South region, the bracket that Wisconsin's in, is particularly interesting, with Kansas State being a 4 seed, and then, of course, Virginia being a number one, and Wisconsin's path to obviously a Final Four berth would go through those two teams as well in this region of the bracket. But really, with looking at the Ducks, I mean, Oregon's on a 8-game winning streak. I know they're probably one of the hottest teams in the nation in that regard. You talk about a lot of the national pundits making this a popular upset pick. Obviously, a 12-5, was a 12-5 or 5-12 matchup. You always like those odds, and you've seen over the course of the years where, you know, 1 to 2 per year really pop out with an upset. I think with Oregon, I'm worried with Wisconsin with the opponent's points per game that Oregon allows. It's on top 20 in the nation, just about 63 points per game. They only allow 29.4% from 3-point range. So, and I'll get into Wisconsin's 3-point shooting of late, which causes concern for me. But I mean, you mentioned it with just their resume. I mean, you look at their KenPom, the best wins, you know, over a Syracuse team in November, but then the other wins in conference with a really poor Pac-12 schedule. Pac-12 season overall. I mean, their two best wins in the conference is against Washington, which right now is ranked 51st in KenPom, and that was in the regular season finale and in the Pac-12 tournament championship. I think the one thing with Oregon that people really like is the fact that they blew out Washington, you know, 68-48, a 20-point blowout win, and they play good defense. And you see a guy like Peyton Pritchard, who was recruited by Wisconsin before he signed with the Ducks, have a huge game in that tournament title game with 20 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 steals, stuff like that. Where you take a look at where Wisconsin's been, and you've seen kind of the Achilles heel of this team being not finishing around the rim. There are a couple of them actually where finishing around the rim, free throw shooting, especially from Ethan Happ. Even shooting from deep, which in the past, since February 6th against Minnesota, I mean, they're shooting under 30% right now. So there are some cause for concern, but I'm projecting Wisconsin to go on. I think there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors with just how good Oregon's playing compared to the competition they face, compared to, per se, what Wisconsin's dealt with in the Big Ten Conference. But it's still going to be a hard matchup and really, JR, it's March. The "This is March" slogan that you have, how do I say it? It's anything can happen. And so you saw that last year with Virginia and UMBC, and you know, Oregon could come in guns a-blazing, and next thing you know, Wisconsin's going home on Friday night. Otherwise, you could also see Wisconsin go ahead too. So I'm intrigued by this matchup. It's going to be fun, and it's going to be a power five, you know, quote unquote power five. It's a power conference matchup. So compared to maybe a mid major. So it'll be interesting to say the least.
Yeah. The power conference thing is tricky in that for people who have paid attention to college basketball, they know this, but people who maybe haven't, the Pac-12 is garbage this year. Just terrible. Possibly. Yep. Possibly the worst season that a power conference has ever had, a power five conference has ever had. And so you see an Oregon team that's 6-8 in conference. They've lost to UCLA, which is just so bad this year. And even though they
did 110 in KenPom.
Yeah, just terrible. And even though they did win against Washington, Washington was gonna make the tournament, but it wasn't gonna be it was never a slam dunk. And that was the team that was kind of the leader of the pack pretty much the whole way. So this conference is just really down this year. And you mentioned Peyton Pritchard. Maybe that's the answer to this question, but I look at their roster and I'm trying to find out the guy that really should scare the Badgers the most, if there is a guy who should scare the Badgers the most. Obviously the Badgers are good on defense too. This is a game up to like 55. This is going to be a low scoring game, but when you sort of look at the Ducks, is he the guy you'd say, yeah, the Badgers really have to account for him? He is going to be their problem.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a focal point, and you're gonna have to have Demetri Trice and Brad Davison look at it, guard him well. I mean, he's 6'2", and I'm looking at right now the game notes for Oregon and their tentative starters. 4 of the 5 starters are 6'9" are at 6'9", listed at that. So going to be interesting for Wisconsin, where you have Ethan Happ at 6'10". You know, Nate Reavers right around that same point. Khalil Iverson about 6'5", but then you have Demetri Trice and Brad Davison that are around, 6'2", 6'3-ish. So, you know, there may be some matchups there that Oregon may be able to exploit. I think Pritchard will be the big key, especially, I mean, averaging just under 13 points a game, 4.5 assists per contest heading into the tournament. I think Lewis King, the guard, a 6'9 guard, freshman, 13 points a game, almost 6 rebounds a game. I think that's going to be a key for Wisconsin too, and keeping those two down. And you also have Paul White, who's a redshirt senior out of Chicago, 10.6 points and nearly four boards per contest. I think he'll have an opportunity to show off his skills, and he shoots almost 38% from 3-point range. So that he is a little bit of a threat in that regard too. So I think those are the three big names, but you know, Oregon is missing Bol Bol, the 7-2 center who was averaging 21 points in 9 games, almost 10 rebounds a game, nearly 3 blocks per contest for that matter. But he's been out since January. I mean, he only played 9 games this season before injury hit. So really, it's going to be it'll be interesting to watch. But I think Pritchard's the big key, especially the way he facilitates the ball.
Yeah, Bol Bol, the son of Manute Bol, who was one of the top freshmen in the nation, still is. He's going to get drafted, maybe even still be a lottery pick, but that injury certainly changed the course of Oregon's season. You were kind of talking a little bit off mic about the seed in general, the Badgers. A lot of people kind of thought they were safely in as a 4, maybe a 5. They do lose to Michigan State in the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament. I don't think anybody's arguing that the 5 is probably right, and part of that is that this team has been kind of frustrating this year. They've racked up a good resume. They've got Ethan Happ, who's one of the best in program history, and yet with his free throw shooting and just in general the struggles this team has had on offense at times has made for some aesthetically unappealing basketball. And I know Badger fans have struggled with this team a little bit. Do you feel like the 5th seed is about where they're at? And sometimes that question's a little difficult because it's also about what's around them. I mean, I do think this regional is pretty favorable even when you look at the next game. But what did you expect that the team would dip to a 5, or was this kind of what you were expecting?
I was right around a 4 or 5. I thought maybe a couple weeks ago I thought they'd be a 4. I thought they were actually a solid 4. And a 5, you understand too. It seems like maybe it's just looking from a perspective of Wisconsin, where this team during tournaments in the past would be like, oh, they should be this seed, or they predicted this and they drop a couple of seeds lower. And I felt like a 5, I think it hits right on there. This team was 19th in the last AP poll. Grant Kenpom has them at 12. And so that's what kind of threw me off, where maybe they'd be a 4 seed there. The net rankings too have had them high throughout this season and whatnot. I mean, they're 17th right now in the net rankings that the NCAA has. So I'm not surprised. I think fans wanted a little bit higher. I think with how tough and difficult the Big Ten schedule was, and they came in 4th place, once again, reestablishing that precedent that was broken last season. I think Wisconsin really, I think they're in a decent spot. I think it's something, if they went dipped lower to like a 6, I think there would have been more of an outcry. But 4 and 5 seem right to me, and being the 5 seed in the South, heading out west, which seems like a normal thing for them nowadays. I think it's fine.
Yeah, for sure. West is definitely where the Badgers end up. That includes both times they went to the Final Four in recent history, 2014 and 2015, and also in 2000. And there's a little bit of a synergy in that. I did an oral history of that 2000 team a few weeks ago, making the Final Four with virtually no stars on that roster. And no stars on that roster. And one thing that they had going for them is one thing this team has going for them, the strength of the Big Ten that you just mentioned. This is a tough conference. And there are going to be teams in this conference that, I mean, I look at teams like a Minnesota or, I mean, a Nebraska who didn't make the field. Like, those teams are good. And I think they can make some noise in this tournament. They do have 8 teams in, which is the most of any conference. And so that does serve Wisconsin well at this stage of the season. If this Wisconsin team does make it to the Sweet 16 or does even make it beyond that, what do you think are the factors that go right? And some of that, part of that question is just like, what makes a good tournament team, which is kind of an unanswerable question because it's potentially different depending on the circumstances. But what do the Badgers have? What assets do they have that are going to enable them to push into the upper tiers of this tournament?
Really, it comes down to, and our colleague Jim Polzin from the Wisconsin State Journal had an article about this a while back, talking about finishing around the rim. And I think you see such the way that Ethan Happ can create shots you know, around the rim and around in the paint. And you've seen Khalil Iverson now starting to reestablish himself and playing his best ball, arguably, I believe, in his career at the right time, right around tournament time and towards the end of the regular season like he did. That's going to be critical. I think Nate Reavers getting involved with an inside-out game too will be very intriguing to watch. I know maybe he hasn't made a lot of noise lately, but I think the key, and even in games like against like Michigan State or Ohio State, not they had the opportunities to make those layups, those bunnies, and they did not. They didn't fall. And so I think, yeah, case in point against the Spartans, Hap went 6 of 13 in the final 20 minutes of the loss in the tournament to Michigan State. So I think that's going to be key for Wisconsin, is to, when they have those opportunities, make those shots in the paint and dominate in that facet. But, I mean, it seems, I know, maybe too obvious, but having an inside-out game with Wisconsin is going to be big. If they double, if Oregon doubles Wisconsin or another team, if Wisconsin advances past Friday afternoon, you're going to have teams like, you know, they're going to have to make shots from deep. And I referenced it earlier, but, you know, in the, gosh, the past, like, I don't know how many games, but ever since February 6th against Minnesota, when they're on the road at Minnesota, they've only made 28.8% of their shots. That's from deep. That's 59 of 205 three-point attempts. I calculated that out right before jumping on with you. So, and you're seeing Dimitri Trice. We never thought he'd shoot 60% from three-point range the entire season, but he's regressed to the mean there, where he's shooting about 40% now. So it really, you need Wisconsin to make those three-pointers when the double comes on Hap. And you've seen like Nate Reavers get some open shots. You've seen others even be a little bit hesitant with taking a three when it's open. If there's a quick moment where it's open, they can shoot it. Maybe they try to pass for a better look and it's not there. They may need, they maybe a little bit more assertiveness, I think, will be big for them. But they do need to start hitting those shots. And, you know, a guy like Brevin Pritzel, who during tournament play, or during not tournament but conference play, according to Wisconsin's game notes, led the Big Ten in three-point shooting. Like, he, you know, he's come out big as a glue guy, but making those, you know, clutch threes like he has throughout the second half of the season, that's going to play a role. And you also want to get a guy like Brad Davison back on the right path. And, you know, he had a good game a few games ago, but, you know, getting him back on track too. They just need to start making some of those shots from deep, because if they can do that like they did at the beginning of the season, that opens up a pick-your-poison type mentality with Hap, where, okay, you either double them, and if that's the case, well, you're going to leave someone open from deep, typically. But if the shots don't hit, well, then they'll, you know, that takes away that advantage there. And when you have four potential starters that are 6'9", right around the 6'9", you're really going to have trouble possibly finishing in the paint. So there could be a bad scenario for Wisconsin in this first round matchup, really, that, you know, if the shots don't hit from far and if they can't finish at the rim, well, how are they going to score? But I think, obviously, they haven't seen a player like Ethan Happ. I expect him to get his points, but I think going further in the tournament, if that happens, they're going to have to rely on making those baskets around the rim, finishing in the paint, and not shooting below 50% in that category, but then also just really helping out that inside game by making the shots when they're available.
I think everything you just said can be transferred to what, to any game this in this tournament, but I'll ask for your quick thoughts on a possible second round matchup. Kansas State, UC Irvine meet, and Kansas State is the 4 seed, the higher seed, and Big 12 co-regular season champion, coached by Milwaukee and Bruce Weber. Their big problem, though, is the availability of one of their best players. Dean Wade has been dinged up all year off and on, and it's unclear if he'll be able to play or what sort of strength he'll be at if he does play in the NCAA tournament. So the Badgers could be getting a team that's a little bit, you know, a little bit shorthanded if they do advance and get Kansas State in the second round. UC Irvine, I've heard a few people pick them to get into the Sweet 16 because these three power conference teams just aren't among the most impressive in the field because of either injury or the Badgers have had their struggles, and Oregon is sort of a team that is a surprise to even be here at all. So a potential second round matchup. I don't know how much you know about Kansas State or even UC Irvine. Any other impressions that would jump to mind if they meet the Badgers?
Yeah, I mean, I think Wade's status being unclear for the opening round and potentially further is big for Kansas City. I mean, they won the regular season for the Big 12, but they pretty much, they lost early in that tournament. I think, first off, UC Irvine has a great nickname, the Anteaters.
Yes.
Shout out to the Anteaters. But I mean, they won 30 games this year and they won the Big West Conference, both in the regular season and in the tournament. So they deserve to be in the round of 64. So, but I think, and our Tyler Hunt, who kind of broke down the South region, you guys should, if you guys go to BuckySmithQuarterback.com, he takes a look at really, just some short looks at these teams. And he mentions that, UC Irvine led the NCAA in 2-point defense, which obviously with Wisconsin trying to finish around the rim and really having that presence with Happ and Iverson and sometimes Reavers, that'll be, that could be a problem, depending upon what happens with just, the outcome of the game and just how Happ can establish himself. So, I think those two games, I think it'll be interesting between those two. I got right now Kansas State moving on in my bracket, not to talk about my bracket at all too much. I got Duke going all the way. Let me just be honest. Zion Williamson's insane. And
you're not going to win your pool picking Duke, man. Everyone's going to pick Duke.
I know, right? Be bold. So go Virginia then. But then on top of that, I think you have a guard for UC Irvine and Max Hazard that should be interesting to watch too. So I think that second round matchup, if Wisconsin can make it that far, it could be with Kansas State one of those teams, because they're one of the best defensive teams in the nation. If I'm not mistaken, they were fourth in defensive efficiency according to KenPom. So that's going to be something to watch. And they're 23rd overall there. So, they're in for a reason, and they won the Big 12 for the regular season for a reason. So it'll be really interesting to watch how it all plays out. And again, anything can happen this time of year.
Lots of good defense in this corner of the bracket. It's not going to be for the faint of heart. It's not going to be the most optically pleasing, but Wisconsin will have as good a chance as any to get through into the Sweet 16. With this matchup against Oregon, the Badgers played Oregon, of course, both in the 2014 and 2015 NCAA tournaments. Very memorable game in 2014 at the Bradley Center in Milwaukee. Badgers went into the locker room down 12. They came out guns a-blazing. It was a crazy fan base, crazy finish. I wonder what your recollections are from that game, the big moments. I went back and watched some of that game just the other night. We're going to do sort of a look back on JS Online. If you're hearing this on Wednesday morning, should be there already. And if not, just wait around for it. But when you see Wisconsin Oregon NCAA tournament, what are the memories that spring to mind for you?
That comeback in the Bradley Center was just phenomenal. I didn't get a chance to go to the game, which I think maybe I'm a little, being back then, just feeling the atmosphere. I'm always one to kind of take in, let's say at Fiserv Forum back in December, the atmosphere for Marquette and Wisconsin when I covered that game was tremendous. And I'm guessing that Bradley Center atmosphere would have been even higher, obviously, when Wisconsin and Oregon played back then. And I was at a friend's house just having a cookout, if I'm not mistaken, and just kind of sitting back and watching just the team fight back. And you saw, a 20-point swing in that second half, outscoring them. Yeah, Wisconsin scored nearly 50 points in that second half. And, you had, along with that too, Bruss three-pointer with just about 67 seconds left in that game, about 70 seconds left in that contest. It was a huge, huge game for Wisconsin. And that's, part of the glory days, if you will, or the fond memories of those two seasons. And now that's set up a new precedent. That team set up a new precedent for Wisconsin basketball, sort of like just how, Barry Alvarez set a new precedent way back for that 93 team that won the 94 Rose Bowl. There was a new precedent set there, and that continued for the 98-99 teams that won back to back. And now Wisconsin's now enjoyed Wisconsin sent out that graphic or that message yesterday to a lot of us talking about, they've had 43 total appearances in bowl games and in NCAA tournaments since in the past 25 years. And so But that game in particular with against Oregon, I think for basketball, everyone knew the consistency that Bo Ryan had with his team and in making something, not I'm saying out of nothing, but they not a lot of the 4 or 5 star kids playing tough defense, you know, low possession game. But that team really kind of set the tone for new precedent for Wisconsin, what they could do and be not just contending for a Big Ten title every year, but a team, a program that could compete on a national level every year. And you're seeing that now where, you know, even when Wisconsin lost 4 or 5 earlier this year, teams, you know, fans were starting to get antsy and you know what, you know, some fans, I should say, maybe a vocal minority talking about Greg Gard and, you know, is he the coach? And then they reel off 6 straight wins with starts against, you know, number 2 Michigan at the time. So there's a new precedent set for Wisconsin basketball, but really, you know, for the athletic program as a whole, this is kind of the golden age of teams, you know, 10 wins football is a standard and competing for a Big Ten championship in basketball and making a deep run in the NCAA tournament. Those are the norms now. And that team in that, you know, for, was it 2013, 2014 and what they did against Oregon in the Bradley Center, man, I mean, that continued that new precedent for basketball.
Yeah. You just don't get that sort of atmosphere at an NCAA game. I mean, you just don't get a partisan crowd. And you see that when you go to a Big Ten tournament or any NCAA tournament, you don't have one side just completely, you know, it's not a home game atmosphere. So that's what made that such a rare occasion in the Bradley Center, which is now decomposing in downtown Milwaukee, right next to Pfizer Forum. Before I let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts, something I asked my colleague Jeff Patricus last week. How do you feel about the legacy of Ethan Happ? When you look back, he's 29 points away from second all-time leading scorer, already the all-time leading rebounder. Give me your thoughts on how you're going to remember him. I know he's frustrating to a lot of guys, a lot of fans, but he's also one of the greatest that ever was in a Wisconsin uniform. So give me your thoughts on him.
It's a great question, and it's something that, you know, we've wrestled with on our podcast for Bucky's Fifth Quarter, and that really comes with just how he is one of the most unique players. He's one of the best players to come out of Wisconsin, and you've seen just the number of what he's done in his time, in his obviously he's been here 5 years, but 4 years playing and setting the record books ablaze with what he's done in points and rebounds and assists and blocks, two steals for that matter. He is a point guard in a center forward, you know, point forward's body. So, and I think his career will be overshadowed a bit to an extent by the free throw shooting that degraded over the course of his career and the ability, the inability to shoot maybe, you know, from beyond the paint. Not to say that he hasn't tried, and you, after practice, we'll see him take shots after shots after shots and working with the coaching staff there. But in game time, I mean, he works with what he does best, and that's making, you know, making sweet spin moves around and getting, creating shot opportunities. So I think history, I think down the road will shine a lot better on him. I know, I think for some fans, it is frustrating, as you mentioned, him working, you know, not being able to connect on free throws or not being able to extend his shooting from beyond, like I said, the paint. But the offense rolls through him right now. He can create things that many others cannot. Micah Potter mentioned to me the Ohio State transfer that will be eligible the second semester of next year. Mentioned to me earlier in January, just talking about how his footwork's second to none in this country. And so I think people tend to forget that. They glare more on the negatives. But when you average a double-double your senior year, your assists are nearly 5 a game. His legacy is he'll be one of the best. He's not a complete player, but he is one of the best that's come out of this program in recent memory.
He is Jake Kokorowski. You can find him at Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Check out his podcast, Bucky's Fifth Quarter, Badgers Podcast. You can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. He's the deputy manager of Bucky's Fifth Quarter and the podcast manager. He's also an author. If you're a football fan, a Wisconsin football fan, Walk On This Way. You can find that just about anywhere you tend to get books. It's a great look at all the walk-ons throughout the history of the Wisconsin football program. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate you as my special guest this week, and hopefully we can do this again sometime. Thanks for swinging by.
Hey, anytime you need me, just give me a ring.
As promised, next on the docket is Ben Steele, Marquette Golden Eagles beat reporter. He is on his way to Connecticut to check out Marquette as they take on Murray State, another 5-12 matchup. I was hoping maybe we'd get that 4-5. Well, Wisconsin would be a 4, Marquette a 5, and they would potentially meet in the second round of the tournament. That would be some craziness in the state of Wisconsin. They have never done that in the tournament, and they, well, unless they both make it to the NCAA championship game, that will remain the case going into 2020 because they are not matched up there, in fact, obviously, with the same seed in different parts of the bracket entirely. But still wanted to get his thoughts. This Marquette-Murray State game is going to be one a lot of people are watching on Thursday. Here's Ben about that. I am now joined by Journal Sentinel Marquette beat reporter Ben Steele, live and in person from O'Hare Airport in Chicago. He's headed to Hartford, Connecticut, as the Marquette men's basketball team gets ready to face Murray State. Ben, you're joining us mid-travel. I love it. Nothing beats podcasting from an airport, am I right?
Always on duty, JR. Always ready to drop everything and pod at the earliest convenience.
Yes, at my earliest convenience, because clearly not your convenience, but I do appreciate you stopping by. Even if it is on the Badgers podcast, I'm sure there'll be some listeners who are not a fan of me diving into Marquette, but it's March Madness. It's all the same bucket of craziness.
Yeah.
So for starters, when you saw it was going to be Murray State, that's definitely a 12th seed that a lot of people had circled. They do have one of the best players in the country, John Morant. He's going to be a top 3 pick in the NBA draft. That's a team that I'm sure a lot of people were going to pick to win their first round game, no matter who they faced. When you saw that it was going to be Marquette, what were some of your first initial thoughts there on how that matchup might go down with the Golden Eagles?
The matchup, I knew it was going to be immediately one of the first round matchups of the whole tournament, man. When you look at Ja Morant and Marcus Howard, those are the two highest scoring guards in the whole tournament, and facing each other in the first round, a lot of hype's been made about the matchup, but you know, Marcus Howard isn't going to be guarding Ja Morant. That's going to be Sakaar Anum's job. Sakaar Anum, is a pretty good defensive guy. He's been faced a lot of good guards in the Big East, but Ja Morant's probably going to be the toughest assignment of the season for Sakaar Anum. So that's what I started thinking about when I looked at the matchup.
From what you've seen of Sakaar Anum, because like you said, he's going to be spotlighted here. Is he up to the task? Has he had successes defensively that suggest he can match up with a guy like Ja Morant? And you know, he's coming off this weird game where he got ejected along with half of the room at the Big East semifinal against Seton Hall. I don't know what sort of thing that does to a person when they have their season, their tournament cut short there. But like, what elements does Sakaar bring to the table that will enable him to hang tough in this matchup?
As you saw from the technical fouls against Seton Hall in the last game, he's not afraid of he's not going to back down from any challenge going up against Miles Powell in that game. And he's had good success against Miles Powell during the regular season. Phil Booth from Villanova faced a number of different guys. This is going to be a challenge for Sakaar, but he's not going to back down. And I think you mentioned the last game against Seton Hall. I think that frustrated and angry after that game, that they've got a little bit of an edge about them right now.
Marquette, of course, many people know, has struggled down the stretch. 5 losses in 6 games. They they had a chance to beat Seton Hall, even despite all the weird officiating and losing a couple players to ejection. And they had a look at the end from Marcus Howard, but he really struggled from the field, just 1 of 15. He's got that wrist thing that seems to be hampering him a little bit over the course of the season. What's the update on that? I mean, is Marcus Howard going to be full strength? Is he going to be capable of going on one of those runs? Because it seems like if the wrist bothering him the way it is, it could really stand in his way.
Yeah, it's his left wrist, we should say. That's his non-shooting wrist. he's going to play. How much it's bothering him, the team and him won't say, and Coach Ojahowski won't disclose exactly how much is bothering him. But if you just look at his stats over the last, he originally hurt the wrist in a fall against the late February game at Villanova. And if you look at the stats, that was the first game of Marquette's slide to end the regular season. So it's definitely affecting him. And he bumped it against Seton Hall in that game in the Big East tournament and just aggravated a little bit. He had to leave the game for at the end of the first half or the last few minutes of that first half. And he came back and he shot 1 for 15. He missed 6 free throws too, which is a sign that something is definitely not right with him. Because I don't think he ever missed 6 free throws in a game in his life. He only missed 7 in all of last season. It's definitely bothered him a little bit. He's a tough guy. He's gonna give it a go. I think it affects him mostly ball handling. Like I said, it's his offhand. And dribbling and trying to make passes out of the double team is that's where I think that bothersome wrist injury could hamper him a little bit.
In general, Marquette was top 10 at points this season. I believe they got as high as number 9, maybe number 8 in one of the polls, and then had this late season skid where now they fell out of the rankings by the final batch of rankings, which is really kind of incredible. Just a bummer late season stretch, whether or not the injury had something to do with that or not. You see them as a 5 seed. Does it feel like to you that's a disappointment because this team was essentially on track to be a 2 or 3 seed? Or was this really maybe just more about a regression? Like this team was, they pulled out a couple close wins. Maybe they're more in the middle, not necessarily this late stretch, not necessarily how good they were early in the season.
Yeah.
Maybe a 5 seed is accurate. How do you look at that?
Yeah, that's interesting to think about. I think it definitely, if they had been in the mix for a 2 or 3 seed, that might have been a little too high. I know a lot of people thought the late season slide would knock them down a little bit. That's really not a factor in what the NCAA tournament committee looks at. They look at the complete body of work, and when you look at Marquette's season, they were really good in quad 1 and quad 2 victories. Big victories at home against Kansas State, Buffalo, Wisconsin, and the non-conference. I know that seems like a long time ago, but that does factor into the NCAA tournament seeding. So where this team was at when the season ended, I think a 5 seed was probably pretty accurate.
I mean, what is it that's going on with this team? Is it just Marcus Howard's injury? Like, what is, I guess, can you summarize why it has just been such a slog lately for the Marquette men's basketball team?
It's a confluence of a lot of different factors. I think, they were right there to claim the Big East title in the regular season. And, nobody on this team had been in that kind of position before. And, it's not something you could practice or prepare for. You just have to go through it. And I think when they stumbled that first time, at Villanova, when they had a late lead, they had a chance to knock off, the perennial Big East favorite to the title, but it would have definitely put them far ahead in the driver's seat in that late February game. And, they struggled in that one down the stretch, went cold in those last 5 minutes. Marcus Howard was in foul trouble. That was the game, like I said, where he hurt his wrist for the first time. And, so they blew that opportunity. And then the next game at home against Creighton, the same thing kind of happened. It kind of spiraled in the second half. And I think it just became like a mental block. And the team started pressing. And that led to more mistakes. And the spiral just continued and continued to miss shots and silly fouls that led to foul trouble and the turnovers that were a big issue down the stretch. It just became just contagious. That whole bad feeling was just contagious, and it just spiraled on them.
Let's say Marquette gets past Murray State in the first round. They probably, yeah. Well, I shouldn't say probably, but like Florida State is the fourth seed. That's a team that they could face in the second round of games. Yeah. That's a team that I thought showed pretty well in the ACC championship game against Duke. Not many teams have stood up to Duke, and I thought they played okay. What is your impression of that potential matchup? Have you looked at Florida State at all, and do you know how they would match up with Marquette?
I think it would be a very, very, very tough matchup for Marquette. Florida State, one of those teams that kind of like St. John's in the Big East, that gave Marquette, you know, loads of trouble during the regular season with those two losses. The Florida State's just got a lot of length. They're not a good shooting team, but they got so many long arm defenders, and that's the way teams have kind of had success against Marquette, switching a lot on defense and switching defenders 1 through 5 against Marcus Howard. Just throw a lot of long arm defenders at him, make him give up the ball or try to shoot it over you. So Florida State, I think that's a team that would give Marquette trouble.
Yeah. St. John's, not the comparison you want to hear if you're a Marquette fan. And then again, you see them. It's ironic that in this stretch where they've lost 5 of 6, the one win was a dominating win against a team that had beaten them twice during the regular season. College basketball is just impossible to figure. I'm sure, and the tournament
March,
is no different.
It's nothing makes any sense.
It's true. It is definitely March, and I'm trying to remember what Marquette was at, what they were seeded in 2003. I feel like I should know that, but they were like a 4 or 5 seed, weren't they? I mean, they got Kentucky in the Elite Eight, so maybe they were a 2. I don't remember, but feel like this team is that type of team because they have a guy who could go off for literally 35, 40 points in any game he suits up. They've got some supplemental guys. They can hit threes. They do have a rim protector when he isn't in foul trouble. I guess you could say this about every team, but it was easy to see Marquette as a Final Four contender for almost all of this season up until this late stretch. Do you think maybe they've lost that's just a really high bar to reach for Marquette?
Yeah, that might be a little too high of a bar, I would say. You know, just looking at the brackets, you know, Sweet 16 potential matchup against Gonzaga, that might be the team. But yeah, like you said, man, it's March, crazy stuff happens. You get a hot shooter, you know, not just Marcus Howard, but, you know, the Hauser brothers, they can get hot from behind the arc. And, you know, in these tournament games, whoever gets hot from 3-point range, you know, that could be a recipe to make a deep run.
Marquette was a 3 seed in 2003, I was not too far off from where they are now. But yes, like you said, I think we'd be pretty surprised to see them in the Final Four at this point. One thought: it's too early to start talking about next season, and there are a lot of things that could happen. Mm-hmm. Players could transfer. I mean, I don't know. Right. Marcus Howard isn't showing up on draft boards, so I don't know how realistic a pursuit of the NBA at this point would be. But certainly, he, you know, probably is going to try to gather some information on that front. But this whole team could be back next year. I mean, they're not. They lose Matt Helt, a role player, and Camerata walk on. Otherwise, everybody comes back. Is there some? I mean, as you kind of look ahead a little bit in the future, there's got to be a little bit of buzz around this team. That's maybe the wrong word with Marquette, but there's just probably a little bit of excitement about what could happen here in the 2020 NCAA tournament.
When you look at the Seaboard House here, you know, this is his fifth season. This season was where the program was going to start turning the corner and head in the right direction. Season slide, you know, they were in the top 10. A lot of exciting games they played. You know, the buzz was building this year, but it's all leading up to next year's team, which will be even deeper. I think they'll probably start the season in the top 10. When you look at all the pieces that potentially return now, we can talk about Marcus Howard and all that. That's a whole separate conversation if he's going to test the waters or not. But assuming he's back, the team's going to be absolutely loaded. And you look at who they're adding into the mix. Greg Elliott, who played a lot last season as a freshman, he's redshirting this year with thumb injury. He's coming back. They got a transfer from Utah State, Kobe McEwen, who is probably what this year's team is missing, that kind of a ball-handling point guard that can, you know, ease some of the ball-handling duties on Marcus Howard. He's also a tough nose forward that's not afraid to get after you a little bit. You know, just what this team this year is missing, they get that next year. And, potentially be one of the best teams in the nation next year.
He is Ben Steele. Read everything he has to say about the Marquette Golden Eagles at jsonline.com. I know, this is the Badgers podcast, but it is March. We gotta spread our wings a little bit. And thanks to Ben. Thank you for joining us, man. Even in the midst of your travels out to Hartford, Connecticut, enjoy the rest of your flights, my friend.
All right, I'm going to hit up the local Starbucks in this fine establishment. At O'Hare.
Yeah, at O'Hare, the local Starbucks is 5 feet to your left. There are plenty of them, so you should be fine. Thanks again, Ben. We'll catch you again real soon.
All right, thanks, Jared.
Thanks for checking us out. We hope you enjoy the big dance. It starts Tuesday night, Wednesday night. We've got some games, first four games in Dayton. A lot of Wisconsin players that are going to be taking part. You can check out a full rundown of those guys and connections to every team in the dance, all 68. It's my personal passion project every year. 68 degrees of separation, connecting Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin, to every team in the dance. Some a little more ridiculous than others, but still a lot of fun. Check that out at jsonline.com. We got so much coverage of this stuff. We've got tons. Ben Steele wrote about John Morant, so you get to know him a little bit better and what Marquette will be facing on Thursday. Jeff Patricus is constantly filing information on the Wisconsin Badgers basketball team. That's all at jsonline.com. Rundown of the women's basketball players from the state of Wisconsin. The Marquette women are headed to the dance as well. Wrote about them. And you got to find it all. And now it's also a good time to check out our digital subscription sales. Lots of great opportunity right now with the tournament going on, with the Brewer season starting up, for you to save on a digital subscription of the Journal Sentinel. Please check that out. jsonline.com/deal and see what the latest offers have for you. Thanks for listening. My name again, J.R. Radcliffe. We will catch you again very soon. Hopefully it's good news. Next time we chat, we'll talk to you then.